lot of dudes.
Just, it is a sausage party up in
just
here.
Just a lot of...
Not the Seth Rogen movie, just...
Thank goodness. Yeah.
Mm. Although there was a good orgy at the end of that. From what I hear.
Good is kind of a stretch.
All right, so I'm with my normal host, Ryan.
Hello.
Derek is in Tampa, so he is joining us in spirit and...
He's a force ghost over in the corner. You can't see him. He looks like Ben Kenobi. I don't know what's going on.
Nice. I like it. And then our costume couture host, Ian.
Hi.
And our guest. We have Jordan.
What's up?
And Chris.
Hello.
So, guys, we've got a fun topic tonight. We're talking about the best 90s movies. And since I did the outline, I allowed everybody to pick both personal and, you know, culturally the best, you know, objective and subjective here. I hope you guys brought your A game.
Oh, yeah. I always do. My book isn't as thick as his, but that's not important.
I spent so long creating
this. I hear it's
so
more about the way it is written.
Yeah. I really spent a lot of time, you know, cultivating this list.
I'm sure you did.
I'm sure we'll all be able to tell exactly how much time you spent cultivating your list.
Absolutely. So, some fun stuff happened this weekend. First of all, I saw War for the Planet of the Apes, and it was fantastic.
Spider-Man got dethroned after it's on its second week.
Yeah. Spider-Man dropped
significantly.
Huge. Like,
that's the power of Andy Serkis right there.
Biggest Marvel drop ever.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing because it wasn't that... I mean, it wasn't a terrible movie. Of the Spider-Man movies, it was pretty... You know, decent. So,
and out of the Marvel movies, it was still decent. Yeah. So it was kind of a disappointment. But
Michael Keaton, though.
Man, Michael Keaton.
I mean, I know we got to bring him up on every podcast. So.
You know.
Drops my pen and I'll lose my complete rationality.
Rachel, her pen is her fidget spinner, so she has to constantly have it or she can't focus on what's happening.
Serious. It's a serious need. But yeah. War for the Planet of the Apes. Really good film. I enjoyed it. Anybody else see it this weekend?
No, I'm going to see it tomorrow,
okay.
I think.
Unfortunately, I just caught up on the other two movies yesterday.
Fair enough.
I bought the two-pack, so...
I'm going to say that it might just be a perfect trilogy. It tells a really good story from start to finish, and they do good things with characters. You know, the apes are the stars and not the humans. So.
Dadgummit.
I know. How am I supposed to relate to apes?
Right?
Give me more single white apes or men.
Single white apes?
No, I don't know what I want. That's Congo, I think. Hey, Ernie Hudson was great in that movie, so.
He was.
I mean, I want
you more single white apes. Go back and watch the Mark Wahlberg version. Okay. There you go.
Well, I'll not do that. Marky Mark, not my friends.
Anyway. I think what you're alluding to is the fact that the BBC pissed off a lot of people this weekend.
Yeah.
Well, meh, whatever.
But they also made a ton of people really happy. And
why is that?
About 50% of the population was pissed off and 50% of the population was happy, so give or take.
Anybody left over just doesn't have a TV, so it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. They made the Doctor a woman. She's being played by Jodie Whittaker for...
Whether you like it or not, it's happening.
Yes.
Disappointing it's not Hayley Atwell.
Same.
But, you know.
I will share that sentiment.
Like, I think people were hoping for something...
Ginger?
More.
I don't know what the ginger obsession is, because I'm not a Caribbean, but...
David Tennant, when he regenerated, he said, still not a ginger. And then Matt Smith, when he regenerated, he was like, still not a ginger.
So it's an in-universe joke.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it'd be more funny if they never made the Doctor a ginger. I think it's just a funny, as he's more disappointed as it goes on.
Oh, come on, again?
Yeah, exactly. To me, it's just funnier if they're never a ginger. Plus, you know, we gingers are soulless. Can't be doctors.
It's true.
Good point. Well, there are soulless doctors, but they're practicing. That's the difference.
So, let's leave Doctor Who for another episode. We can talk about all the cool things and obviously sexist things that's going to come from this because, you know.
That's the world we live in.
That's the world
Derek
we live in.
Derek isn't with us in just in spirit. He's also with us in our chat. So,
is he?
Yeah.
I see.
Hooray!
You can't tell me how to get the chat up, so I can't
classic Derek
communicate.
So there was some other Marvel stuff that happened. D23 Expo happened this last weekend, which is big Disney convention. Happens every 2 years, I think. And they showed an Infinity War teaser there.
They did.
Yeah. They sounded pretty cool from the descriptions are out there.
A ton of the cast on there. They also revealed...
Which they said was only a third of the people in the whole cast, yeah.
But they also reveal Thanos is Black Order, which are his children. They, at first, like on Friday night, they just revealed four statues under capes, and people thought it was going to be the Fantastic Four. And I was like, absolutely not.
You guys are crazy.
Yeah, that's too much.
That's not happening. But it's the Black Order, and it's pretty much akin to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, if you...
Not to steal the thunder from X-Men Apocalypse.
Right.
Well, there's no thunder to steal from that movie.
I don't know. They did tell a better Weapon X story than, you know, the very first one.
That was the only enjoyable part of the movie.
Even if it was tacked on.
Yeah. I still can't get past Ivan Ooze, so.
Yeah, agreed.
So yeah, if you want to hear what the trailer was, I'm sure it's going to release this week with San Diego Comic-Con.
It for sure will.
But yeah,
or something along
Thanos
that line.
Is shown with two stones,
yeah,
and he's able to wield a planet as a weapon because of those two stones, apparently, in the
which
trailer.
Which is really cool.
Which is crazy. Captain America has a beard, so I'm hoping he gets his nomad suit. It's gonna be pretty cool.
They also said that they're going to do an entire superhero Marvel like land adjacent to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. So,
there's lots of lands being built.
I'm dying for this news. Like, you get the property, you build an amusement park. That's all there is to it.
Yep.
I'll go to Asgard.
Absolutely. That would be awesome. Mm. Wakanda?
Yeah, it would be cool. Wakanda would be pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, from what we've seen in the trailer, very beautiful. So.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on. So, best movies of the 90s. Let's see.
I think I started last time, so...
Okay.
Make one of these folks do it.
Well, let's have
they're guests for a reason. We need to put the pressure on
he's
them.
A guest host.
All right. So, just any order doesn't matter?
Any order.
Cool.
I'm probably going to go chronological, but don't let that influence you.
Derek would go
it
alphabetical.
Won't, because I don't have the dates on here, so...
Or how much money they made.
Now, mind you, I was born in 1993.
Ugh.
So,
why would you say that?
Just hold on. I'm prefacing just... So, a lot of these movies I'm not seeing until, you know, the 2000s, mid-2000s, what have you. But some of them I did see in the 90s. So, the first movie I have is Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, I love it!
Because that is the first movie I saw with Robin Williams in it. That was my introduction to him.
Yes.
Live action?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it was made off a $25 million budget, made $441.3 million.
Cool.
Chris Columbus directed it, had Sally Field in it, Robin Williams, Pierce Brosnan, the kids, Matilda was in it, I can't remember her name.
Matilda, one of the Lawrence boys.
One of them. and it's just super funny. It's physical comedy, it's, you know, prosthetics, it's just a whole mess of funny. And I always laugh at it, and whenever I feel sad, I always put that movie on.
That's
so
a good one. How do you guys feel about Mrs. Doubtfire?
I think it's a good choice. I remember just watching it recently myself. Like, my dad went to the store and bought one of those four packs. It's like a family four pack, and in the four pack was Mrs. Doubtfire. We put it on for the kids, and they loved it. And they're like 8 and 3, and they thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching it thinking, you know, there's some jokes in here that would not fly in this decade.
Yeah, no, not so much.
But because of the time, they got away with the humor, and I thought that was well done.
I can appreciate movies that do that.
It's okay. We just have somebody jackhammering in the background. We're doing some construction on Jack's house where he's gone.
I'm not entirely sure which appliance that is. Like, I can't even pinpoint.
We're expanding
that.
The basement.
We'll we're expanding the basement. We're not telling Derek about it. He's finding out live on this podcast. So to get in the chat and see how he reacts.
Yep.
I do want to say we're getting a lot of people talking in chat about their favorite 90s movies.
That's
we
awesome.
Did have some rules put onto us by Rachel specifically. She's the one that ruined all our lists.
Right.
Mine was not ruined because of this. So
some of these movies, specifically Independence Day, Fifth Element,
Jurassic Park.
Those movies are off of our list because we've already talked about them quite a bit on the podcast. There's probably some other ones that we could add to that, honestly. But
Matrix, The Terminator 2, like, we talk about them a lot because they hit our... oh, what you call it? They get our sci-fi ones, yeah, and you know our essential geek podcasts. We've talked about them. They're groundbreaking films. So
technically, though, there's only three films on the list, so yes, those other films may get mentioned.
Yes, and at that's some fine. Point. We totally can.
Derek said that's a fridge, by the way.
Oh, okay, cool. Thanks
for everybody wondering. On the edge of your seat about the noise.
You know, yeah, it's also personal and objective. It's hard to have a movie about the 90s, or a podcast about the 90s movies and not mention The Matrix because of how revolutionary it was. So, anybody want to talk The Matrix since we're on it? Did anybody have that one on their list?
I did not.
I did have it on
there. There you go.
Jordan.
I got every
Let's do it. Bring on...
All the knowledge. came out in 99. Budget was
barely 90s, but it was 90s.
Yes.
Budget of $63 million, made $463.5 million in the box office.
That's incredible.
Of course, with
especially 99.
Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, Carrie Ann Moss, Hugo Weaving, of course, one of the best ones in there. And I can never get their names right, but the Wachowski brothers?
They were the brothers then. They're not the brothers now.
They're the sisters now.
Yes.
Still.
Yes, the Wachowskis.
Wachowski or Wachowski?
Wachow.
I was going to get the wrong one word.
Everybody just say Wachow.
Wachow.
I love it.
I refuse.
Of course.
Killjoy.
Yeah, that movie along with Fifth Element, I think, and probably Independence Day in the 90s was kind of reintroduced sci-fi to the world because sci-fi had been kind of a dwindling
genre. It really genre did get forgotten about in the 80s.
In the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
There was a couple other movies in there that can give partial credit to. But
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a brilliant film. The choreography was interesting. The way it was filmed was revolutionary. That like 360 camera blew everybody's minds when they saw it.
You know you've done a good thing when everybody else is copying you for at least the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And started questioning their own existence.
Yes.
That was the only
and everybody wore trench coats after that, too. Yep. So.
And sunglasses, too.
Are those not cool anymore?
No, I think they're coming back. You should keep your collection.
Sweet.
The only thing I didn't like about it was just, like you said, everyone copied them. I got really tired of the bullet thing and, like, every other...
I mean, that's not the fault of that
movie.
Okay, enough. We can move on from this now.
So everybody's in agreement, whether you like The Matrix or not, it's pretty important to films.
For sure.
Okay.
As long as we're talking about the first one only.
Yes, right. You mean dirty, smelly hippie orgies not important?
No,
it's not. I'm good.
I'll pass. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll break up the dude fest. I'll go. So I'll start with the movie that made the absolute least amount of money, I imagine. Clerks. Opening box office weekend was
$31,000. Oh.
It's got to be the absolute definition of a cult film because this film just still picks up speed as more and more people find it, but it's really just a silly movie about two jerk clerks at a gas station and video store, and they just goof around with each other, and in the meantime they have like some really important conversations and they get to know themselves as well as each other and they become better friends. And you know, even if your girlfriend has sucked 37 dudes,
They're talking about fingers.
If she still toes. Makes you lasagna, yeah.
It's toes.
You should keep her.
Wait, that's just in the parking lot on the way in, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Yeah, great movie. Kevin Smith, one of his early films.
Yeah.
His first major one, really.
Even the sequel wasn't the 90s, but it was still a pretty funny and decent film. And same actors and everything. So, yeah, I really love Clerks.
Absolutely. It started the whole View Askew universe, and because of Clerks, we got really great films like Chasing Amy and Dogma, too. And so, yay, Clerks.
Hurrah.
Hurrah. Okay, Chris or Ryan, who's up next?
Sure, I'll hit it up.
Go ahead.
I mean, I've got all my prep.
You do.
I'm going to go with Fight Club right off the bat.
Yes.
David Fincher directed it. Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, Helena Bonham Carter, Jared Leto before he was... actual actor. He was just like a Yeah, he was Angel Face.
Oh, was also in My So-Called Life.
Oh, yeah, okay. There was that.
Interesting.
That movie, Fight Club, interestingly, it did not do really well at the box office. It had a $67 million budget and only made like $100 million. So it wasn't a super big financial success, but it kind of gained a cult following mm-hmm. once people started actually seeing it since they didn't see it at the theater. It, you know, the book I've never read. I've heard it's great. The movie definitely captured a lot of people's feelings about the world and things like that and gave them something to kind of latch on to, and they thought it'd be cool if they started their own fight clubs. I remember, I'm pretty sure I was in high school when that movie released, and everybody was like, I'm starting a fight club, you guys want to come? And it's, no, I don't want to go fight people. What kind of person do you think I am? It's a movie. Jeez. But yeah, great movie.
Yes.
One of my favorites.
That one was on mine. I absolutely love Edward Norton's Insomniac Fantasies.
Yeah, and how screwed up Helena Bonham Carter is. And really, really both of them. Right. How screwed up
like
they
in
are
real
together.
Life or in the movie?
We're talking about the movie. Okay. So,
clearly.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
You're up, buddy.
My first choice.
Wow, with all that prep.
Yes. Oh. Yes, I had less than 5 minutes.
No, you told us at the beginning.
You're right. Yeah, no, I lied. I got asked to join this cast, you know.
I contacted you like a few days ago.
You did, but you didn't tell me to do any prep, so.
Oh, my God.
So I hastily put together a very quick list of films that I thought were either important to film and or myself.
Cool.
For my first choice, I didn't write down what year it was made, but I picked The Truman Show, starring Jim Carrey, directed by Peter Weir, and it was pretty interesting film, and that was one of Jim Carrey's first non-comedic roles. He has moments of humor, of course, but he never deliberately cracks a joke for the sake of being funny.
Absolutely.
And so I thought it was one of those movies that kind of also explored like the television culture, like the way audiences view it, and the way TV is presented to people as a whole, and how we are like consumers, we're just kind of sucked into this world of other people's lives on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I almost picked Man on the Moon because mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Jim Carrey's '90s stuff, but Truman Show is probably. Much better than Man on the Moon, to be honest. Like, I love what it says about humanity. I love how, you know, we want to live this perfect life, and you know, we're obsessed with reality TV, even though we all know that it's 100% scripted most of the time. You know,
yeah, like his actions are completely and 100% genuine according to the story.
Right.
You know, everyone else is an actor, and so for him, it's just life.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know, which is what makes it a true reality show in that sense. And it's kind of fun to see everyone else, either as the actors on the show itself or the people watching the show, how sucked into his life, you know, because he's just such a simple individual. He's got no prospects.
But they concoct all his
But he's still such a genuine individual that people gravitate towards that.
I like that movie. I think it's good, and it came out at the time where it was relevant to what was happening in the TV realm and the world, you know, kind of.
It's very poignant now, too.
The peak of the reality genre and everything like that, so.
Before it exploded, before reality TV show was on every single channel, you know, while it was still unscripted,
it was starting to explode at that point.
But. Yeah, I mean, they were still having issues in the real world episodes where cast members would just be sitting there doing nothing for hours, and they'd get really bored. Like, well, you didn't give them any books or television. What do you want them to do?
Yeah,
it's true.
All right, so we're done with our first round. That means, Ian, you're up next.
Cool. All right, now, when I say this...
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
I hate when he crap. Oh, this is going to be another Iron Man 2 is the best Marvel movie isn't it? Oh,
just
really
don't attack me.
I
used
this.
To, but then I rewatched it and like, not so much. Just don't attack me directly at first. So, Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Episode 1 of Star Wars.
Okay. No, I understand why.
I actually almost chose that myself.
So $115 million budget, made $1.27 billion back.
Yeah.
Now,
and that right there is why we have to talk about this movie.
Yes. This was the first kind of reboot of Star Wars, if you don't count the special editions.
Reboot.
Ian's going to hug you later.
You know, re-energizing the series. Or even just
return to a series that has been dead for
I guess
so
not
long.
Reboot, but re-energizing the series. Yeah. It, you know, 99, I was 6 or 7 when it came out.
Shush.
And this was the first...
Shush, Chitty Monkey.
This was the first movie that I actually waited in line for with my parents for a midnight release. You know, I was young, so I loved Jar Jar Binks when I was younger. Nowadays, not so much. But...
I think that's the overall consensus.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. It's Star Wars. It has a huge impact on me because unlike other people who grew up with 4, 5, and 6, I grew up with 1, 2, 3, The Clone Wars, and now... You know, 7, 8, and 9.
You're still growing up with them.
I am.
Okay.
I'm not mature yet.
We know. You put Phantom Menace in your top 4 movies of the night.
I was going to say.
There's more than 4 on here.
Were you old enough to watch the re-releases when they were remastered? They were back in theaters.
They came out in 97,
You
would have
been like 3.
No. I've been like 4 or 5.
But still.
I don't know if I watched them in the theaters, but I watched them on, you know, VHS later.
Rogue Drax says, it's kind of funny. These guys are talking about movies that are older than we are.
That's not true.
I know it's not, but it's funny.
But
it's funny because of Ian. Because he's because
I'm 24,
you,
so
yeah. Rachel's a baby. I'm old, so I've seen. I've lived through all these movies.
But no, that's a personal favorite of mine because.
Did you live through the Ewok Christmas special?
No, he didn't.
No.
Spoiler alert! Born in 93.
The Ewok. No, I did not. But that's a big one for me was Phantom Menace.
Like, it's not best by being a good film whatsoever.
No.
However, I'm not quite sure we would have the same sci-fi environment that we do now without that push from George Lucas again. I think he made a lot of missteps, and he killed off the two best things, which was Liam Neeson and Ray Park.
Yeah. That is
right?
True.
So thank God for fans to bring him back for Clone Wars.
Yes.
And that's the power of fans.
And without,
with spider legs.
Yes, and without, you know, 1, 2, and 3, you wouldn't have the Clone Wars. You wouldn't have these characters that are back and we love. So,
it's true.
You know, without this stepping point, there wouldn't be this stuff right now.
Very true.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to say, I was in junior high, I think, when that movie came out. And at that point in my life, basically every t-shirt I owned had some Star Wars reference on it. I mean, I was hardcore.
Right.
I had all the books. I was reading the Expanded Universe.
Yep.
I mean, I was all about it. And so that movie came out, and I was, nobody wanted to be my friend, trust me. This was before being nerdy was cool.
Womp womp.
So, yeah, I mean, I was at the midnight release. I brought my fake lightsaber that I made out of something stupid,
yep.
And, like cardboard toilet paper tube and aluminum foil, I think it was, with a flashlight inside.
Nice.
But
even back then, you were building stuff.
Yeah, that one was not very good. But yeah, I mean, it was disappointing, right? It was relevant. I can see why you put it on your list, because this isn't necessarily best in terms of, like, critically reviewed and highest gross.
Yeah.
In terms of relevance.
I mean, if that was
the
case, then, like...
Half of our lists.
Yeah, they wouldn't be on there. But culturally, it's important.
Exactly.
So, I get it. I understand.
Hey, I still have my Jar Jar Binks toys.
Oh, sweetie, you have
they're in
to
a drawer
leave.
In my closet.
You have to.
They're
leave.
Just not on display.
I
so.
Can't have you on the podcast anymore.
All right, yeah. You're blacklisted.
That's okay.
All right, Jordan, you're up next.
I'm gonna pick one of my favorite movies, and it's one I can watch over and over again, and it'd be Backdraft. It's one of my favorite movies of all time,
which we've also talked about quite a bit on the podcast.
I don't
I
care.
Have never
you
heard of that
you
movie.
Have not. Though,
it's so. My favorite movie, and I'm sorry. And I know
Backdraft.
Backdraft.
Never heard of it.
Kurt Russell is a firefighter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what
Kurt
it.
Russell
is. William
Barr. It is
so.
Believable.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell can do everything.
Seriously.
Okay.
If you've never seen the movie, I mean, and you just aren't a big Kurt Russell fan, it's believable. He was
all right.
In that movie.
Yeah, you got Kurt Russell, William Baldwin, Donald Sutherland, and Robert De Niro. It's a Ron Howard movie, so it's really good. And budget was $75 million. It made $152.3 million, so it doubled. All
right.
And it's just one of my favorites of all time. It's about brothers, how they butt heads, even, you know, over time and try to heal the wounds. And And they even used actual firefighters in the movie, too, to make it more realistic for some of the scenes.
Yeah,
That's really cool.
My dad, if you've watched the show and you heard me talk about Backdraft, my dad was a firefighter for 30 years. And that was, he always had the movie poster for Backdraft. He said that that movie kind of portrayed the whole firefighting thing better than any movie. And the CG for the fire was, for the time especially, I mean, it still holds up today, but it was pretty incredible back then. It's, you know, I don't remember what movie that, or what year that came out, but at the time 91. It was 91. Yeah, I mean, so that's a pretty old movie at this point. And it's also one of my favorites. It's a great movie.
And it actually made me think a lot more about fire, too, because the way they portrayed fire in the movie wasn't just some inanimate object that did something. It said that the fire actually thought, it ate, it lived, it breathed. It made it sound more like a creature that was coming after you instead of just a, oh, sprinkle water on it, it'll just die. It was more along the lines of, no, it's smart. And
it's
a
living creature.
Yeah, yeah, it can come up behind you and it can get you before you get it. Uh-huh. That's why I love that movie.
That's a great reason. And I love that you have a personal choice on there because, you know, maybe in like 20 years it's forgotten about, but it's because of people like you who have the love for it, it's not going to be. And that's what keeps movies carried on.
It actually made me want to become a firefighter.
So you're a firefighter now?
I work at Walmart.
Oh, okay.
He's a cosplayer.
I could pretend to be a firefighter.
There you go.
All right, so my turn. I'm going to go with a 1982 movie, and that is A League of Their Own, directed by Penny Marshall, stars Gina Davis, Rosie O'Donnell, Madonna, Tom Hanks. The movie is filled with stars. That movie is a lot of fun. It's got a lot of heart to it. This is one of those movies that I never get tired of watching. It comes on TBS, and I will plant myself, and I will watch it, and I have signed people's yearbooks, Avoid the Clap, Jimmy Dugan, and I love them forever if they know what it meant. So I just love that movie.
Where is there
so
no
much.
Crying?
There's no crying in baseball.
There's no crying in baseball? It's a fun movie.
It's very quotable.
And it's very big within the LGBT community.
Well, I mean,
which is kind of funny. I think that's mainly because Madonna's in it and Rosie O'Donnell, but you know.
Right. I don't know. It
not because of Tom Hanks.
It gave me girl power before I knew that was a thing. And
you mean before the female Ghostbusters movie came out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you definitely
these are the
right.
OG Ghostbusters.
Right. The OG men's life ruiners.
Right. Oh, but nobody cared back then. Like, my dad didn't care that there was a baseball movie about women. He thought it was really fun, and we would watch it together. And, you know, say what he wants, that he only watches it for Tom Hanks. He laughs at Madonna, too. So, you know, it's just a fun movie.
It is.
Yeah, admittedly, it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I can't say too much on it. But I remember enjoying it the last time I saw it, so there was that.
Okay. All right. All right. Ryan, that's you.
Oh, jeez. Where to start? Where do I want to go? Okay, we haven't done many comedies, so I'm going to hit up a comedy here.
I love it.
Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yes.
Mel Brooks, Cary Elwes. It was just a great movie. Dave Chappelle and Patrick Stewart, of course.
Yes.
I knew I was forgetting a couple important people. Mel Brooks at his one of his peak movies, if you ask me, maybe
Ullman.
His peak. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, but almost unrecognizable. But
yes.
I mean, just great movie. The subtlety of the humor is something that's kind of lost in a lot of movies
you
anymore.
Changed your name to Latrine?
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much going on in that movie, and you could watch it 5, 6, 7 times and pick up new things every time because it's got layers on layers on layers, and comedy nowadays never has.
That's the great thing about Mel Brooks films is that, you know, it's layered so much that, you know, I still watch Blazing Saddles and I'll be like, wait, what is that? That's something new I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think one of my favorite parts about Mel Brooks comedies is they are so on the nose most of the time, and they're not afraid to step out of bounds of what is acceptable humor. They want to do what Mel Brooks wants to do. So, you can have, like, the characters look right at the camera, and it
and
works.
And that'll get
well.
A laugh. Yeah.
Nobody does that anymore. I mean, the fact that it came out, like, 6 months after the Kevin Costner movie, and Cary Elwes just looked at the camera and said that he can speak with a British accent. It was awesome. Like, that Kevin Costner movie was crap.
Yeah, it was.
It was not good. Sorry, even, Kevin. Like, the mole moving around. I mean, I am a mole? Yeah, it was so good. And you can quote almost every line from that movie.
Absolutely.
It's, one of my favorite comedies ever.
How many of you guys have wanted to do the bubble bath where people just sit there and blow into it instead of like actually
I feel like Ian has probably done that.
Look.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying of all the people here, you're the most likely to
private practices are mine and mine alone.
But you wouldn't be opposed.
I would not be opposed.
It's now on the bucket list for
Yep, it is.
I wish that Mel Brooks was still making original movies instead of turning all of his movies into Broadway plays.
I don't know. Producers was fantastic.
Don't get me wrong. Young Frankenstein on Broadway, it's awesome. But there's not the same kind of relevant comedy anymore that is that much fun. Like, comedy movies are two people of different races falling in love and their parents hate each other, so they all say the C word and do cocaine
Unfortunately,
right.
I've noticed a lot of Mel Brooks' films are, like, genre-specific. Like, he'll make a movie to poke fun of not just this... Like, a movie, like, in the case of, like, Kevin Costner's Robin Hood, it's to make fun of, like, all kind of Robin Hood films, as well as, like, Renaissance, Sword and Shield kind of films. Mm-hmm. But then the closest thing we have to that nowadays, unfortunately, are these films like Scary Movie, which is just
at the time, though,
crap.
When it came out, that movie
the first two were funny because they're trying too hard because they're like, oh, this is pop culture. Let's just make fun of that for the sake of making fun of it rather than actually making good jokes.
I agree. You're up, Chris.
Oh, joy. Okay, well, for my second pick, I'm going to pick one that I had not seen until I actually got to college. And this was like 4 years ago. And this is the 1999 flick, American Beauty. It's one of those films that it took me forever to see because, one, I had no desire to see it. But then someone introduced it to me and they're like, this is my favorite movie of all time. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. I watched it and I liked it so much that I actually went out and bought a copy of it just so I could have it and rewatch it whenever I'm in the mood. Okay. It's not a kind of film that I would want to watch all the time, but when that mood strikes, it strikes pretty
You're
hard.
Prepared.
Like, I'm prepared. Like, I sit down and I'm ready to take this emotional journey with Kevin Spacey.
Is that the horse movie?
American Beauty is the one where, like, he's...
Ian.
I was born in 93.
Why do we invite
Shut up.
You to these podcasts?
It's the one where the guy's filming a trash bag floating around.
So Kevin Spacey is going through some middle-aged stuff, and
as one does,
he's having masturbatory fantasies about his daughter's best friend.
But he starts making weird midlife choices like buying a sports car and working out, and he's actually bettering himself throughout the course of the film until the end when he inevitably gets killed. But I will say, not just his performance, this is actually one of my favorite performances of Chris Cooper.
Chris Cooper is
phenomenal in this movie because he's unrecognizable. Right. Like, and it's one of those films where, like, I can watch him in other films and be like, oh, Chris Cooper's, that's Chris Cooper. But in this one, it's like he's so outside of his wheelhouse in terms of the character that he's playing that I have to remind myself that that's Chris Cooper.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. American Beauty is a great choice. Very popular and kind of relevant of the
time.
Won
a lot of awards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It won Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Actor, a couple others that I can't remember off the top of my head, but good movie.
Yeah.
All right, Ian. You're up.
All right. So I'm going to go in the comic book realm, and let's go with Batman Returns.
Good sequel.
That was on my list, too.
Because, we got to talk about Michael Keaton, so...
We gotta get our quota. Our quota has been met. Yeah.
So, $80 million budget, made $266.8 million in the box office. It's Tim Burton's sequel to Batman. Tim Burton is not known for doing sequels. I think this is one of, like, the only sequels that he actually has directed. Mm-hmm. Stars, Michael Keaton as Batman again, Danny DeVito as the Penguin, and Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman.
Yes.
This is the first Catwoman we've seen on screen since the 1966 movie. So, obviously,
was
you know...
Was it Julie Newmar?
No, it was not.
Eartha Kitt?
That was Lee Merriweather.
Oh, God, there's so many.
So, this one is my favorite just because of Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman.
She was one of my earliest crushes.
Plenty of reasons to love that movie. So, saying that Michelle Pfeiffer is your favorite part... is saying a lot.
Yes.
Because it's not like Michelle Pfeiffer is the best and everything else is trash.
Right.
Like, that's not it at all. Danny DeVito,
he's a great penguin.
I couldn't take him. Like, that might have been the first role I saw him in
as I think it was
a
for me
kid,
too.
And I couldn't picture him as anything else until, you know, by the time I see It's Always Sunny, and I'm like, all right, you're finally somebody else. You're
and it
not...
was horrifying. Like, as a kid, when he bit that guy's nose,
yeah,
I was
that
like...
that freaked me out.
Like, what
he's just, yes, like, oozing the nasty, like, oil out
all
of his mouth.
Time.
I'm like, that's nightmare
and
fuel right
yes. You know, yeah, it, as an adult, if you go back and watch it, obviously there's a lot of, like, sexual
innuendos
and
yeah,
like,
yeah,
or flat-out, like, comments, and you never pick up on them.
Right?
I think the reason...
disgusting.
Like, to go back on what you said about Tim Burton, like, being one of the few sequels he ever made, it's like one of those moments you notice where they direct one movie, the producers want it a certain way, and mm-hmm, they prove that they can make a good film. This was the movie where Tim Burton got to really explore the Batman that he wanted to put on film.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so it's like they gave him free reign after he proved he could do a good Batman film, and like,
yeah,
here's the reins, and he gave us this sequel that, in my opinion, is probably better than the first one.
No. But Burger King, like, hated them because they were doing a bunch of toys from this movie, and this movie was probably not the greatest movie for kids to see.
No,
you know,
it was
Penguin
not.
Drooling out the black stuff and, like, give kids nightmares.
No.
But they
yeah
had the little, like, wind-up figure that you pull back, and it does, like, the hypnotic umbrella thing on the car.
And we also can't forget that, you know, Christopher Walken was in it, too, as the villain.
Yeah,
so,
he was. And
which was,
forget that, actually.
Which was interesting because he plays a villain that I don't think that he was in the comics. I don't know, like, if Max Shrek was actually in the comics, or if that was just something that Tim Burton created,
probably.
But...
he didn't really read the comic books very much.
It's so very dark. It's, you know, it's Tim Burton's universe. It's Tim Burton's Batman, so things are not gonna be like the Batman now. And I kind of miss Tim Burton's universe in Batman.
I miss the look of how Gotham was always super high-tech, but everybody dressed like it was 1942.
It was like a modern steampunk, almost.
Something like that,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Gotham is kind of always... there's always been allusions to that it's like this not in a specific time period type of city.
Yeah.
It's always been, yeah.
And yeah, I think Tim Burton was kind of the one that really brought that to the forefront. I don't think it was like that in the comic books before that. But
it wasn't. It was like an actual just city.
But the 90s animated TV show definitely played into that.
Absolutely.
Yes, it took heavy inspiration from Tim Burton's Batman.
Rogue Drac in chat said, hey, I still have my Batman Returns toys. I want to be your friend because that's awesome. I still have a few of them too.
I still have my Batman Returns toys. So
I plan on cosplaying that Catwoman.
Yeah, it's
the
best Catwoman costume. At least
it's
my
so
favorite Catwoman costume.
It's
maybe
probably
it's
the most memorable because the minute she came on screen, it's seared into your
brain. Yeah, even like, I would love to see more people do like the ribbed version with like the hair half out. You
right.
Know, waiting towards the end of the movie. That's great. You don't ever see that.
Catwoman
one, but yeah, great costume.
It's
I love
hard
that
to make a really like pretty cowl and then like
rip
you want to tear it up. Like
yeah,
that
yeah
sucks. All right, Jordan, you're up.
I'm gonna go with one that scared me as a kid. The Silence of the Lambs.
You watched that as a kid?
Ooh.
Yes.
What kind of torturous parents you have.
I have cool parents that show me cool stuff. And
good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
It explains a lot about you, actually.
I can list the cast, but the main one is just say Anthony Hopkins, and that's
yeah
the whole part of the movie right
yeah
there.
Yeah,
man only
absolutely
had 13 minutes of screen time in that movie, and he still won the Oscar.
Yep.
And it's $19 million for the budget, $272 million for the box office was the total. And I learned this fact today while researching. This is one of only three films to win the Big Five.
Yeah,
which
really
is
one.
It won best movie, best screenplay,
okay,
best director, best actor, and best actress.
Okay.
So it's mm-hmm only one of three, and I think the last one won it in, like, I want to say the 60s?
Before so, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, and no movie has done that since.
Wow.
I think Jodie Foster is probably worth mentioning in that movie, too. I know you
yes
post
I know
Hopkins there, but Jodie Foster is the main character, and she did a great job. playing a new kind of CSI type, you know, investigator.
Yeah, nobody cared about those kind of police officers back then.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a super sexualized character or anything like that. It was, she was very like plain and, you know, just doing her job and got pulled into this horrible situation. And yeah, she was great. And I'd say equally as good as Anthony Hopkins.
That movie is just incredibly disturbing. And the more you watch it, it changes genres, at least for me. Like, it'll flip back between suspense and psychological thriller and horror. And it's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. I can't even say much about that guy. He scared the heck out of me, and that's all I remember about the whole movie. Just, you can always just look at, you see anything with him, and just automatically go right back to Hannibal Lecter and just, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Buffalo Bill totally rattled me.
That was,
I didn't even care about him. That's the bad thing. Except for the whole...
That's what makes the role of Anthony Hopkins play so memorable, is that he steals the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
He stole the show from the real antagonist of the movie.
Yeah.
And I even just like the little joke at the very end, you know, just to end it all. I'm going to go have an old friend for dinner. And just like...
Yep.
Oh, oh crap.
Okay. Yeah.
I know exactly what that means. And okay, movie's over. Moving on.
Silence of the Lambs is a great film. Great film. And since then, they've had like four or five films to...
Spin-off series, yeah.
TV show, yeah. It's obviously very culturally important.
Yes.
Yeah. It stayed the test of time. And
definitely.
I even tell other people that, you know, younger people now, I'm like, hey, you should see this movie. And they're like, I never heard of it before. I'm like, how did you not?
Mm, they're probably younger.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I love that movie.
I'm not saying I'm telling an 8-year-old.
They're probably your friends.
No, but I'm just saying it's a generational thing, you know.
All right. So I'm going to move on to something happier.
Please.
Clueless.
Aww.
I picked Clueless because Amy Heckerling, the director, has such a good eye for properly conveying teenagers of a certain time. She did it in the 80s with Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And in Clueless, she kind of repeated herself, where this one was based off of the Jane Austen novel Emma, and she shows just how utterly in our own worlds we are as teenagers, how nothing else is important. Like, the biggest, you know, the climactic scene is driving on the freeway in L.A., and it's falls to the wall crazy in LA, but at the same time, like, that's a small scale thing, but for a teenager it's huge. So she just did a really good job of pinpointing exactly like how insane teenagers are. And I think that the more I watch it, the more relevant it still is for teenagers. You just change the wardrobe a bit and change the jokes a bit.
It's not tapes that you're burning, it's you know, MP3s. I mean, that movie is kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, that was my introduction to Alicia Silverstone, and one of my early crushes because of that movie. And you got a young Paul Rudd in that movie, too. But even more, to touch on your point, the director didn't only nail the being a teenager in that genre, or in that era, it was also, like, a very specific group of Valley teenagers that she nailed. Because, I mean, I don't relate to the fact that they're Valley girls, you know, but they're teenagers. And, yeah, so she kind of covered... multiple bases and did it very well. But yeah, I totally appreciate that movie. I don't know if I would put it like in my top 10 favorite movies of the 90s, but yeah, I watched it a lot on TBS and else was on.
I hate to say I've never seen it.
That's okay. Never seen
it? No, it's cool.
It's fine.
Yeah, you're not like lesser of a person for not having seen it, but yeah, I mean, it was a good one.
I don't think that people have to see Clueless at all, but if you want like a perfect 90s time capsule, that's it. Because... I mean, like he said, it's not a reflection of every 90s teen, but it's, you can see all the different little cliques, the rich kids, the poor kids, the burnouts, the nerds, the, you know, it's, we see that still. The genres, the cliques, they're still there.
They just kind of evolved with the times, they're still there.
Yeah. But for me, it's like the perfect 90s film. It screams 90s.
It does. For teenagers.
Even those big, you know, cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
There weren't a lot of really great teenage focused films in the 90s. You know, in the 80s, you had a lot.
A lot. Thank you, John Hughes.
Yeah, John Hughes really, you know, kind of showed what could be done in that genre. But in the 90s, that kind of fell off. And I think Clueless was probably one of the only successful. I don't even know if it was successful. I didn't look at the box office or anything. But
it made $10 million opening weekend, which compared to the other movies on my list, it seems reasonable.
I'm sure the budget was much less than a lot of the other movies on all of our lists. So.
All right. That was it. Ryan, your turn.
Okay. Okay, well, I did a comedy last time, so I'm going to hit it with more of a satirical kind of film here. Starship Troopers. When you're talking about the sci-fi revolution of the 90s that you had kind of in the later part of the 90s, that movie, I think, I want to believe that that was part of it. Realistically, it didn't make enough money to be actually part of it. It was $121 million that it made overall in its entire run, and $105 million it cost. So it broke even, maybe, but beyond that, it was not successful. But it definitely has a cult following. It's, you know, if you go to Dragon Con, there's usually a booth of people that just do the soldier costumes from that movie.
There's one at Denver Comic Con, too.
Yeah. I mean, and the bugs were really cool looking. The CG was actually really good. The satire was wonderful. Would you like to know more? You know, that whole thing. Everything in it was, I think, really great, and I think that movie still holds up even today.
I know for a lot of guys around my age-ish, it was the first time they saw boobs on the big screen, so...
That was an early one for me, That was Denise Richards, right? Yeah, that was, I remember that vividly. But a great movie, beyond the boobs, a great satire,
beyond the boobs,
kind of the genre and just kind of the world as it is. If you haven't seen it, you probably haven't. Maybe you have if you watch this show, but the majority of the public hasn't. Go see it. It's very good.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great. Yeah, chat loves it. It's a really underrated movie that should have been more popular, I think.
Absolutely.
Hey,
Chris.
Well, for my third choice, I'm going to go with something a little more serious. I went with the 1992 Western Unforgiven, directed by Clint Eastwood.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. It was an Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Director, and it's one of those few films that, much like some movies we discussed earlier, it kind of brought back a genre. Because up until that point, Westerns were inherently silly if you exclude, the spaghetti Westerns that ironically starred Clint Eastwood, like Pale Rider or High Plains Drifter and whatnot. But it definitely took a more serious tone about what people living in the West at that time would probably actually experience. You know, people died, people got, infections, people...
It was Oregon stabs, Trail to Film.
People stab someone for, laughing at his penis. I mean, it's...
You haven't?
For the record, that still happens.
Yeah, it still happens. But, it made the West not so glorified anymore.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't see that again until much later with other films like 310 Yuma or even the show like Deadwood and whatnot. You got more serious, realistic, gritty Westerns that would be more akin to what actually happened. And this one kind of stands out also culturally because it was a major influence in the comic world, because it was one of the big inspirations behind Old Man Logan, which is why we now have films like that.
Yeah.
And it definitely helped inspire literature and future films and whatnot. That's kind of why I chose that one.
The Western, I feel like, is a underappreciated genre in modern filmmaking, and we forget that it's entirely American, that it's one of the things that only we have, that you think about it, we don't call Asian films Easterns, so it's just the whole name, it's something that we should all be very proud of. There's good, there's bad, there's funny, there's... just serious. And Unforgiven's a really, really good one. And the 90s didn't have a lot of good ones. I mean,
Tombstone, right?
Right. 90s. Yeah. That's
I'd probably put that above Unforgiven, but,
Honestly, that was going to be
my... No, it's cool. I put them right about the same tier for me.
Just the cast in Tombstone for me.
So good.
I mean, Unforgiven has a wonderful cast with, like, Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman.
They're good, but they're not my, like, personal heroes.
Yeah, you've got Val Kilmer, Kurt Russell, Bill Paxton.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Come on,
You can now. All right. Ian, we're back to you. Last ones, guys. Make them good.
All right. Oh, I'm torn between these two then.
Do it. We have less than 10 minutes.
All right. So this one spawned off of a cult TV show. And this is X-Files Fight the Future.
Oh, goodness.
It was a good film.
Okay. I just said, oh, goodness.
But you said
I know what you meant, Rachel. Trust me. We're not inviting him back.
Look, I love the X-Files. It was a show that my mother grew up on watching. Well, not grew up on watching, but she, you know, watched and then had me watch, and I grew up watching it. $66 million to make it, and then $189.2 million in the box office. It was set between seasons 5 and 6, so it bridged a big gap. One thing, you know, people didn't watch the movie, they came into season 6, they're like, what now? But, I mean, I always loved the X-Files. It explored aliens, explores, you know, conspiracy theories, government cover-ups, just fun, heart-racing, kind of, you know, 90s action with...
palpable sexual tension.
Yes.
Even though Gillian Anderson is a lesbian... palpable sexual tension.
Yes. Thank you.
Sorry. Someone had to say it.
That's true.
If we can take anything away from this, that's going to be the quote. It is. The tag underneath the...
But I love it. The X-Files always, you know, have a special place in my heart, so that's mine.
I think that's fun. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Jordan, you're up. Can do it.
There's like three I'm stuck on. I can't really...
narrow down your BBs.
You should have already done this, Jordan. Come on. Figure it out.
Handle your business. I might get some flack on this one, but no. I'm going to go with Titanic.
Ew.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. This is from the guy that said episode 1, okay? So I think Titanic can be allowed.
If I want to see a movie about a ship breaking up, I want to see about a ship breaking up, not people.
Well, it's I ship it.
It's still one of the fifth highest grossing movie of all time right now.
And it was first for a lot of our lives.
Yeah.
For me, though, I've always been fascinated by the ship itself, so see it to be brought to life that way really was something I really enjoyed. As I don't know, I can't tell you why, but just in history, I've always been fascinated by the boat, especially all the stuff behind it, like a book being written 14 years before. Exactly telling, it was a book called The Titan, and it actually went almost word for word on how Titanic went down.
Nice.
Now, like, I know it's $200 million to make, $2 billion with the original plus the re-release on the 100-year anniversary of the sinking. Gosh. So,
that's insane.
Relevancy to, like, you have obviously a personal connection to the movie, but relevancy to the time period, I think, was... That movie made a big difference in movies.
Absolutely.
At the time. So I think it's fair on the list, just as fair as episode 1.
Right. Yeah. And just like The Matrix, too, it created an entire cultural revolution. That song was absolutely everywhere.
It still is everywhere.
Museums still have traveling shows featuring the Titanic. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that this unsinkable ship was able to go down is scientifically important. It's historically important. So many people lost their lives or just barely missed it and still have stories about that. Mm-hmm. And really, we got to see, you know, just what Leonardo DiCaprio was capable of as an actor.
I remember the theater experience more than I do the film when I first saw it, because I have it still on VHS. But I remember going to the theater and it being the last movie I ever saw in theaters that actually featured an intermission. I remember going there, the movie ending halfway through, and they're like, Act 2 will start later, and I went, got popcorn, used the bathroom, got a drink, and came back and saw the second half of the film.
I'm not gonna lie.
Movies don't do that anymore.
Hateful Eight did that. They had a special
Really?
They had a special screening, only available at certain theaters. It was not every single episode.
But this was the last movie that I can remember that did it universally. Like, they still...
And I also remember doing that at home when you had to put in the different
VHS. You had to put in the second tape.
Also relevant, relevant to our discussion, that was also one of the early times when boys saw boobs in the theater, so.
Yes.
I, no, yeah, I think that was probably Kate my Winslet first time. Kate
Winslet still hates when you go up and ask her to sign that picture. Like, don't, really? Don't do that.
That's hilarious.
No, it's better if you draw her like a French girl and then have her sign it. Right. Mm-hmm.
But, it did come on two VHS tapes. It did. Mm-hmm. I thought that, like, I don't remember how old I was, but I'm watching that and I'm like, that is the hottest sex scene ever filmed. Like, just...
Literally. That, I mean, it's steamy.
Steamy sex scene. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to do it in the boiler room.
good luck finding the Titanic to reenact.
Thank you. Avoid the jokes. Thank you. Because they make themselves.
They really do. Yeah. But, you know, I'm the biggest joke here. So.
Oh.
And the thing is, I will always let Jack go. Just let him go straight to the bottom.
There was plenty. There was plenty of room on the door.
Hey, Mythbusters proved it wouldn't work, so get over it.
You can't trust everything on Mythbusters. They don't actually use scientific, you know, processes.
Moving on. I have two left on my list because I also had Fight Club. I was going to talk about Hook because Steven Spielberg is amazing. Robin Williams is amazing. But thinking about it, I'm going to go with my other one. Yeah. Interview with the Vampire, I thought was more culturally significant for quite a few different reasons. First of all, Anne Rice had been huge for about 15 years. She had multiple novels under her belt, so the fact that this was the first one just getting published was crazy. But it was also the first time we had ever seen movie monsters portrayed as intellectual beings. And
good-looking.
Right. They were sexualized completely, and there was a euphoric sexual, you know, I guess, presence to their killings and things like that. And it talked about the moral and ethical issues that they have walking the earth for hundreds of years, and, you know, why it was completely not okay to turn Claudia, who was just a child, and it was pretty incredible. Now it's been copied by a million different people. Like, Twilight is a huge ripoff of it, and
Stephanie Meyer's wet dream.
Yes, like, she wishes she was as good as Anne Rice.
Yeah.
But Interview with the Vampire, I just thought, was really culturally, and it was very significant. It also kind of showed a different side to Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt as actors.
Mm. That is one of the only movies that I can actually stand Tom Cruise in.
Same. Mm-hmm.
It's one of those I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. Anything else, I'm like, it's just Tom Cruise being Tom
Cruise. There's very few, and that I agree with you. That's one that's like,
This is pretty good.
It's one of the few where he's not completely running from the camera the entire time. He's not just showing off his muscles. He's being an actor. Lestat is a well-acted character. And it shows the talent that he has that, you know, nowadays he chooses to ignore.
Yeah.
It's true.
I don't know that he chooses to ignore it. They just keep giving him roles and paying him a lot of money to do roles that don't require it.
He just doesn't refuse those roles.
Yeah. If somebody rolled up to my door, chooses to ignore. If you rolled up to my door with a big truckload of money and said, you don't really have to do anything except show up and speak.
Excuse me, I have integrity. Thank you. Get this money out of my face.
Yeah, that ain't
happening. All right, that's it for me. Hook was good, too.
Hook was.
Okay, I'm not going to talk about all the movies yet that I had on my list that we didn't get to talk about, but my fourth choice would be Groundhog Day. Harold Ramis directed, Bill Murray, Andy McDowell, all great. We've talked about it on the podcast before, so I don't want to dig too deep, but it's just a really beautiful movie that you can watch multiple times and catch so many things you missed.
It makes me sad watching it, since that's what caused the Murray-Ramis rift, and they stopped working together.
But the film takes you through so many emotions. Like, you're laughing one minute, and then there's a scene where I'm
how he just killed himself. Or he killed himself and woke up again in the same day.
Yeah, the scene that gets me is when he finds out there's just things you can't change. Like, when he tries to save the old man in the street. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, that's a hard lesson to learn for some people.
Yeah. No, it's a great movie, one of my favorites. I mean, Harold Ramis and Bill Murray are both some personal heroes of mine, so, yeah. I mean,
it has an entire suicide montage, and as someone who's, like, gone through depression, who's had suicidal attempts, I can still smile at it because I mentally understand every emotion he's going through. Mm-hmm. And yet it's still done in a hilarious way. And I don't know, I just let it go.
When he steals the gopher, the most quotable line that
groundhog.
I do.
How did you get when that wrong? It's called Groundhog Day. Like, groundhog. It's a groundhog.
Yeah,
it's
but like when he takes... Yeah, when he takes the groundhog and drives off the cliff and he lands upside down and the cameraman is just like, he could be okay. I quote that in every single movie when someone dies and you know they're dead. Yeah. I just knee jerk. I'm like, yeah, he could be okay.
Like, it's fine.
Okay, maybe not now.
All right, Chris, you're up.
Okay, well, for my last one, this one has a lot of personal... relevance because I actually starred in the play version of it, but I'm going to go with the only animated film that I decided to choose, which was Beauty and the Beast. It's one of the... It has some really interesting significance because it was the first film that was nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards that spurred the movement to create its own Academy Award subcategory.
Right.
And they're like, okay, this film's getting way too much recognition, and there's way too many animated films out there that are becoming better and better and better that we need to create a new category for animated films. Mm-hmm. It's not the first animated film to ever win, like, an Academy Award. I think Snow White won that.
And Walt Disney was presented 7 little Oscars.
Right.
Aww.
But I just chose this one because the animation is... beautiful. It's one of the best 2D animated films. Yes. At the time. The score is wonderful. The lyrics are hysterical and moving at the same time. And like I said, I starred in it one time in
who'd
I think
you play?
Community college. I played Gaston.
Nice.
Oh
yeah. I had to make the tightest shirt I could find. and I wore tights. But no, that was that wasn't even the most awkward part. My sister actually played Belle.
Oh.
So she had the easy job of being completely disgusted with me. I had the hard job of trying to woo her. But back to the film.
You admitted all this live on the internet.
No. It's just one of those films, and just recently they revisited it with the live-action version, and you know Disney wouldn't have done that had the film not had such an impact with the original, so.
That's true.
But yeah, that's my final pick.
That's a good one. I like it. All right, so we're a little over. Quick, anyone want to throw out some... quick ones that we missed, or
I had Nightmare Before Christmas on mine.
I love that one.
You know, Tim Burton not directed it, but produced it, and
he did.
You don't see a whole lot of claymation movies nowadays, and so that one was really fun for me.
Mm-hmm. Throw out Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
cult classic. You almost have to know something from it.
Mm-hmm. I am a little surprised we didn't talk more Tarantino.
If nothing else, you know Samuel L. Jackson's rant.
Yes.
My name is the law.
Yep, yeah. It's true.
Very quotable.
I know so many people who have the wallets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we see that every time you go to AMC theaters over in Olathe, they still have that one on the... It's one of the little cases on the wall. Has the wallet right there next to the glowing gold case. So.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, did you have anything extra?
Oh, I had a whole list.
Yeah.
American Pie.
Oh,
I like that movie. It's first comedies in the 90s. Both the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies.
Nice.
American History X, Hackers, Con Air, Heavyweights, Mortal Kombat,
Heavyweights.
Face Off, Dumb and Dumber, That Thing You Do, T2.
I love That Thing You Do. Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. I wonder what happened to the O'Neaters.
They actually just had a session together. Other than
that's cute.
Tom Hanks was there.
It was Steve Zahn.
Steve Zahn
couldn't make it.
Yeah.
He's filming something.
I guess honorable mentions on my list would include things like Schindler's List, or I noticed you put Shawshank Redemption, and that sparked mine as well.
Yeah.
One film that like really sticks out in my childhood memory was Blown Away. It was such a weird like B film starring Big Lebowski, Jeff Bridges, and I'm like,
Yeah, we didn't talk the Big Lebowski either.
Big Lebowski would be on that list. But yeah, no, that one kind of stuck out in my mind. It's like one of those films I remember watching really young. I'm like, I don't know, TV.
Yeah, they're so good.
I have to throw out one for somebody in chat. Doc Rev told me about this earlier. He wanted to mention Boys in the Hood. So. Ugh.
No thanks.
I promised him I'd bring it up for him.
Yeah, so. When we talk about worst movies of the 90s, we can talk about that one.
Anything Joel Schumacher.
Yeah. Take my bat credit card, please. And some bat
nipples. All right, hey, so chill. We recently had a Patreon challenge.
Yeah.
Ryan.
So we started off with Derek.
Derek, yeah.
If we got an extra $20 in our Patreon for the month of July, then Derek either doesn't mention Star Trek or has to sing ABBA lyrics every time he mentions Star Trek in the month of August.
Yes.
So last week, we hit that in like hours after the podcast because we have the best supporters.
Absolutely.
So last week, we brought up a second perk to the challenge, if you will, a second, like a Kickstarter type perk, an extended
stretch goal.
For if we got an extra $10 or an extra 2 Patreon subscribers in the month of July, then if Rachel mentioned anything Disney, the hardcore Disney, not the Marvel or Star Wars,
correct.
Then she had, the first time she did it, she has to write a 500-word essay on why The Rock is the best actor in Hollywood these days and how diverse,
like
specifically his diverse acting ability. And then every time she mentions it after that, it adds another 100 words she has to put onto it. But we haven't had any biters on that yet.
No. I am going to up the ante. I'm going to double it. So for 10 more or 2 more on top of it, anytime Ryan mentions Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters-related things,
is that including the new one?
Yes.
Dang it.
He has to eat a vegetable on the podcast. No. Yes.
Can it be corn?
Nope.
That's
nope.
A vegetable?
I'm going to just bring out some...
No starches. No starchy vegetables.
No, thank you. Every month, you're going to buy one every week, and we're just going to have a tray of vegetables, ABBA lyrics, and
I'll pack
paper
on
right there.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. So, just to be clear... the next $10 is going to go towards Rachel's stretch goal, and the additional $10 is going to go towards Ryan's stretch goal.
Correct.
So,
and if we keep this going, if this keeps going, we'll drag Ian and John in on it too.
If it doesn't
I'm
keep
staying
going,
right here. Thank
no, no, no. If it doesn't keep going this month, then next month, guaranteed, we're going to have Ian and John in it. Because if we're going to punish ourselves, then
Ian
is going to dress like a lumberjack in the month of September.
I
for one of the Costume Couture episodes. We'll figure something out. But yeah, we're definitely going to bring all of our people into it. So.
Absolutely. I think that's great. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us, Jordan and Chris. Mm-hmm. Is there a Facebook or a Twitter or something people can reach out to you if you want to be reached out to? If not, you can keep your privacy. I don't care.
You got a cosplay page, Jordan. I think you got 7 likes or 8 likes now, so maybe you can get it.
I'm up to 77. Thank
you. Nice.
You
can
get some more. It's just Steampunk Bane on Facebook. Or that was the old name, or you can look it up. Augustus Clockworks Cosplay Compendium, if you can remember that.
Can you spell it?
Nope.
Okay.
I had to figure out how to write it all down when I was making the page. So, but, yeah.
I just started a new cosplay page not more than a few months ago, but it's still small. But it's Will Royce Creations, if you want to go give that a like. It's WILLROYCE, for those of you who don't know how to spell that.
Yep.
But yeah, please go give it a like, you know, support me because I'm still fresh.
Aww. And of course...
Cosplay hasn't ruined you yet.
Not yet, no. Mm.
Give it time.
Buster Props.
Buster Props, yep.
House of Turner Cosplay.
And Costume Couture.
If you had fun, well, give your page a shout out.
Siren Ray with a Y.
With a Y. Yeah, because you're fancy. if you enjoyed this podcast, we do it live every Tuesday night at...
On Twitch?
8 Central, 9 Eastern. And we had a really active chat tonight.
It was
a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So
really
come on
happy.
Twitch has a chat and you can chat with other fans of the show. Yeah, we had a lot of fun interacting. I was typing to them throughout some of this.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
It was good. All right. Join us next week. We're going to be talking about Valerian.
I should probably go see that.
Well, we need to as well.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Gotta do it sometime this weekend. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.